Right. About 2 months ago, I went to see a film called The Shape of Water. I don't know if you've seen it. I thought it was an absolutely wonderful film. It got an Oscar for best film, I think.
Yeah.
And some of the images in that film stayed with me for quite a long time. After a couple of days, I realised that I was in love with Sally Jenkins, who is the lead actor in that. If you don't know who she is, if you've seen Paddington, it's Mrs. Brown. Right? So, and it was quite strange. It kept appearing in my meditations, or she did. And she was appearing in, as I say, quite strange ways. So there was one meditation where I saw myself, I envisioned myself walking into the Theatre 7 and walked up to one of the auditorium doors. And just as I got there, the auditorium doors opened and she walked through and she smiled at me and I smiled at her and I said, "Welcome to Shrewsbury." Yeah? And I thought, well, you know, this is prapancha, this is proliferation, this is daydreaming. And I gave myself a bit of a talking to in the meditation. You know, come on, I'm back to the mindfulness of breathing. And later I began to reflect on it. So that little scene, I'd like you to just hold that for a while, because I'm going to park it and I'm going to go off on a different tangent. And I'm going to say a little bit about my background, my upbringing. So for the first 22 years of my life, I lived in a small coal mining town in North Derbyshire. And when you think of Derbyshire, you might think, oh, Chatsworth House, beautiful, you know, the hills and the dales. The town I lived in was not like that. It was heavily industrial. Coal mines and coalite, British diesel oil and petrol. The smell was appalling. The coal dust was everywhere. There was very little in the way of culture. It was very much a working class area. So I didn't come in contact much with what you might call the arts or imagination until I left and moved down to Berkshire when I was in my early 20s. I think my first memory of art was I was about 10 or 11 and we had a school trip to Manchester and went to an art gallery and I was absolutely astounded by the paintings. So there was very little in the way of classical music, dance. It was very much drinking and gambling and fighting. And so it was a bit rough, to be honest. And I didn't, I suppose, start getting in touch with anything like that until I left my hometown. And I started reading Dickens, which was a revelation. And I really sort of started to fall in love with that. And when I was in my early 30s, I started meditating. And this is, if you like, another tangent. I went on day retreats and weekend retreats. And I met something called puja, worship. Has anybody not done a sevenfold puja? One or two, right. The set of verses, and the idea is that they're to develop a sense of reverence, worship, a sense of joyfulness in the spiritual life. And I started doing these, because everybody else did them. We did them at every day retreat and weekend retreat. And I thought I should like them, because that's what we did. Because we're Buddhists, we do sevenfold pujas. So I persuaded myself that this was to my liking. And I managed to persuade myself for a number of years that I liked doing pujas. And then it started to go a bit wrong. I started to begin to avoid pujas if I could. Because I used to start yawning by about the second or third stage, and get really fed up and uncomfortable and want it all to end. And will these people never stop making offerings? Can I just go home and go to bed? And oh no, you mustn't think this. This is all part of the spiritual life and it's good for you. So do it. And I couldn't really get on with the Bodhisattvas either, this idea of, you know, enlightened beings. Initially it was okay, and then, as with the puja, my tolerance, if you like, to that started to wane. But I didn't tell anybody, because I got one of these on. So I was supposed to be a proper order member, and I was supposed to know all about these things. And I felt a bit of a fraud for quite a long time, actually. There were times when it did go better. It was okay. But generally speaking, I didn't get on very well with them. And then a couple of months ago, when Sally and I got together, I started to look at, well, what's going on? What's actually going on here? And I looked at the first stage of the Sevenfold Puja with Mandarava, blue lotus and jasmine, with all flowers pleasing and fragrant, and with garlands skillfully woven, I pay honour to the princes of the sages, so worthy of veneration. I envelop them in clouds of incense, sweet and penetrating. I make them offerings of food, hard and soft, and pleasing kinds of liquids to drink. I offer them lamps encrusted with jewels, festooned with golden lotus. On the paving, sprinkled with perfume, I scatter handfuls of beautiful flowers. In the town I grew up in, Mandaravas were in short supply. The only lamps available were what the miners took down the pit with them. Yeah? None of this was in my experience. So in chanting this first verse, I was chanting something of which I had no experience in my life. And it actually didn't mean anything. The first verse is about arousing positive emotional states. And it wasn't happening. So it was almost like I was having to run to catch up from the first stage of the puja. So I was always about one step behind and trying to work out where I was in this process of developing positive emotional states, aiming for the goal of enlightenment. So it was, that was quite a realization. And I thought, well, that lets me off then, doesn't it? That lets me off doing pujas. if they don't mean anything to me. But that lasted for about a day or so, and then I thought, no, that really will not do. So I began to think, well, what's actually happening? In what way can I make some sort of contact with the puja? What's happening? And what I realized was that I was actually setting my sights very high. I was setting my sights above my level of experience. All right, so what is my experience? What experience do I have of worship and worshipping something or somebody that I think is worthy of worship? So it was back to the shape of water. What had came up in my meditation, rather than seeing that as a daydream, a distraction, somehow there was a message there which said, well, you know you're never going to meet her, you know this isn't real, so what does it mean? Well, what it means is that you've found a symbol that you can relate to in terms of positive emotion, in terms of loving kindness, in terms of wishing to meet somebody. So what about the first, how does that link? What about the first stage of the puja? So I thought about what my response was when she walked through those doors. My response was, welcome to Shrewsbury. And I thought, yes, that's the first stage of the sevenfold puja. Not with Mandarava, blue lotus and jasmine, but with all the flowers in the dingle, with all the trees surrounding Earl's Hill and the snow on the top of it in the winter, to the shops on Wild Cop, to the walk by the river, to all the things which I find beautiful and enjoyable, which lift my spirits, which lift my heart in living here. All right, we don't strew flowers on the pavement. We don't light incense in the streets, but the feeling of offering something I hold dear to somebody who I felt a great warmth and a great love for gave me an indication that, yes, this is something I can relate to. This is something which actually means something to me. Over the years that I've been coming to this group, which is now over 11 years, I've talked to a lot of people, and I've talked to quite a few of those people about puja, about worship. And I've heard a significant number say, oh, I don't get on with puja, I'd rather not do them. Or I just find them boring, or they don't mean much to me, I can't get any heart connection with it. Similar sort of things. And I think it's a terrible shame that there's a part of what we do within this tradition which a significant number of people feel is of little or no relevance to them. And I'm also wondering about our meditation practice. It took me a while to realize that what I had seen, if you like, the daydream of seeing this woman and opening my heart to her, was more than just a daydream. It occurred in meditation. And it felt more like dreaming in the day rather than daydreaming. In other words, it felt more like a message from a deeper part of me. which instead of saying, oh, this is proliferation, and you know, I need to get back to proper meditation, perhaps I could listen to it. Perhaps I could be listening out for those sort of messages, for those sort of messages from a different part of me, a deeper part of me, which might enrich my practice, which might help me to get over some of the things I have difficulty with. And the snag that arose for me then was, well, how am I going to distinguish between proliferation and dreaming in the day? In other words, having a message which means something for me. And I had to think about that quite a bit, because there isn't an obvious way that I can distinguish between the two, apart from going away and really sitting with that experience. And what occurred to me is, if it's proliferation that I'm experiencing, if it's just getting an idea and then running with it, usually the running with it involves one of two things. It involves greed or hatred. It involves wanting to pull something towards me or push something away. But dreaming in the day had a different feel. It had a feel of a warmth. It had a feel of quite a peaceful feel to it. Something that I could sit with comfort, and which didn't require me to do anything about it. So my reaction of needing to come back to the meditation was just that, I think, a reaction. So listening to what my heart was saying seemed to be the key. It seemed to be necessary to say, what is my state of mind at this moment? Do I have the awareness to not analyze, but recognize what state I am in? Am I reaching for something or pushing something away? Or am I sitting with a thought and a feeling and a message from a part of me that knows something that cognitively I don't? Because this feels like something different. I feel that very often I work in quite a cognitive way. I try and think my way through the spiritual life. And I suppose that comes from my childhood, I think, when the only thing that mattered was getting on at school. And then I trained as an accountant, and the only thing that mattered was balancing the books. And so it was very much a cognitive process. And I also think there was another aspect to this, which it took me until this week, really, to sort out. So the whole process has taken almost 2 months. And I think I'm still working through this. And it is that in taking on the puja, as it was presented to me, not questioning it, not saying, what's this about? What relevance does this have for me? I had ignored the first 22 years of my life. I had set it to one side and saying, that it has no relevance to what I'm doing now. So in other words, I had said, anything I experienced in those 22 years is not relevant to what I do now. And I think that's a serious mistake, because I've got those 22 years inside me. They're part of my experience of life. They inform how I behave and how I speak and how I think. I don't know if you get the same, but I still sometimes hear myself say something and I think, oh, there's my dad again. Or there's my mother. Yeah? So those aspects of me are still there and they're still informing how I go about my daily life. So there's not been what Pranyapriya was talking about last week, those of you who were here, there's been no integration of that early part of my life to where I am now. And I think if me doing this, telling this story tonight does anything, it's actually starting that process of bringing those years into the present time. It's saying, who I was in those days is still in here and still needs to be heard, needs to be listened to and have notice taken of. Yeah. So it's been an interesting process. And I still think it's ongoing. I haven't finished with it yet. One of the things I find really difficult in doing these talks is finishing, because there's no obvious finishing point, because I haven't finished. I'm still going on and on and on with the process. It started 2 months ago, it's still going on with me this week. And it's also about learning something which I haven't done very much of, I don't think, and that's trusting the Sangha with who I am in all aspects of myself. So I'm aware my mouth is dry, I'm quite nervous, because I'm actually showing you parts of myself that potentially you could say, he's wearing a kesa and he thinks like that. You know, it sounds sometimes a bit ridiculous. But I think, to be honest, I do feel a bit ridiculous quite a lot of the time in my life. And perhaps that's necessary. It's a necessary thing to admit those aspects of myself. And if you think they're silly, well, I'm sorry, but that's who I am. If you accept them, that's lovely. No pressure. So that's really all I wanted to say this evening. As you see, I've got no notes, so I probably missed out some bits which in the past month I thought were terribly important. So I might come back and say a bit more, I don't know yet. But what I wanted to do was throw this open, throw the story open and say, okay, have you got any comments, any questions, anything at all that you think you would like to say or ask? Can I just stop this now?